More today on the leaked list of who put money into secret foreign accounts. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. We've been covering the 11 million documents of the Panama Papers detailing the offshore accounts of world notables, from politicians to sports stars. Although many of these accounts may be legal, tax evasion and corruption are not, and law enforcement agencies around the world are opening investigations. As Mitchell Hartman at the Marketplace desk at OPB reports, for years now, the U.S. has been trying to tighten financial oversight and to crack down on overseas corruption.
With untold billions being squirreled away in offshore shell companies and secret bank accounts, you might think little can be done about this epidemic of international tax evasion.
Oh, you know, there's been substantial progress since the financial crisis.
UC Berkeley economist Gabriel Zuckman.
Now there's a law, the Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act, that forces foreign financial institutions to automatically tell the IRS about their customers who are U.S. citizens and of their income and their wealth.
But Zuckman says the IRS still depends on those foreign tax havens to comply, and they've got huge financial incentive to keep mum. Since 9/11, American regulators have been more closely monitoring bank cash flows, says Colin Clark at the Rand Corporation.
And we've seen the Middle East as a kind of locus of a lot of this, countries like Kuwait, Qatar, Saudi Arabia.
Clark says the U.S. now coordinates closely with the IMF, UN, and World Bank on international financial surveillance. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
U.S. firms that were thinking about merging with a foreign company to save on U.S. taxes may be having a rethink this morning, this after the U.S. Treasury came out with tough new rules that surprised, if not stunned, some would-be multinationals. The new limits on what are called inversions include wiping away benefits to a merged company of a three-card Monty-style tax maneuver called earnings stripping. On Tuesday, we talked to Julie Neiman with Smith Moore & Company in St. Louis.
Not only are you moving a U.S. company offshore to pay lower taxes, but they were also taking advantage of the tax laws to deduct interest on debt. And the way they did it was simply to issue debt from one of the companies to the other one, intracompany transfers. It's like taking the mortgage on your house and the husband selling it to the wife and taking the interest deduction off the taxes. It just doesn't work that way. It was a huge hosing of the tax system.
Yeah, in your example, you're both still living in the house, yet you get this bigger deduction, yet not much has changed other than you have a tax advantage.
Absolutely. But, you know, the artful dodgers are still going to stay out there trying to find ways to get around until Congress fixes the code. Biggest example, Johnson Controls is buying Tyco now. Both of those are U.S. companies. They're going to move the corporate headquarters to Ireland to get the corporate tax deductions.
But we should point out it's not illegal to do an inversion. Julie Neiman at Smith Moore & Company, thank you for this.
You bet.
Now, a new installment of our election year series about ways for the U.S. to get serious about long-term opportunities and threats, the ones that don't fit into a single budget year or election cycle. The late writer and social critic Kurt Vonnegut offered an idea during an interview I did with him on public TV.
Look, I'll tell you, it's one thing that no cabinet had ever had is a secretary of the future. And there are no plans at all for my grandchildren and great-grandchildren.
Should the next president appoint a secretary of the future to consider how today's actions might play out in 20 or 50 years? This campaign season, we're taking suggestions for a secretary of the future's mandate. Today, the dilemma facing hospitals and the patients of the future. From Marketplace's Health Desk at WHYY, Dan Gorenstein has the story.
Nurse practitioner Drew Dawkins shakes a few Tylenols into a cup. Dancer-like, he twists and glides past the EKG machine, a case of meds, even a printer, towards his patient. Despite this gear, it's not a hospital. It's Neva Crawshaw's room at her assisted living facility in Denver, where she can get hospital-level care and still hear a live piano performance from the common room. Dawkins has brought the hospital to her.
Let me put it in your mouth for you. Here you go. Big sip. Yeah. All right, here we go. One more.
Dawkins works for Dispatch Health, a company that delivers at-home care for fevers and colds and more serious things too, like mini strokes and pneumonia. Most people in Crawshaw's condition, weak and confused at 99 years old, would be on the next ambulance out, an all but guaranteed ticket to a hospital admission and a bill that could be around $9,000. Instead, this 90-minute visit won't cost more than $300, all while she's kicking back in her blue easy chair.
We can't do $9,000 treatments when there's $300 alternatives, which are just as good.
Bob Kocher is a venture capitalist in the healthcare sector with the firm Venrock. There's already a growing body of research to suggest this so-called hospital-at-home model leads to better quality care. Patients live longer, and costs go down between 20 and 30%. Peering into the future, the numbers of beds in hospitals will likely shrink, reserved for the severely ill. Gary Campbell, CEO of Centura Health, the largest hospital system in Colorado, says his company is bracing for this soon-to-be reality.
We'll do fewer medical interventions on individuals, but we'll have many more people drawn to us because of our commitment to value. And so economically, that's the balance.
Overall, the hospitals that thrive won't be the ones with free parking and fancy lobbies. They'll be the ones that can get to your house faster than the pizza guy. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
Now, if the next president did appoint a cabinet secretary to worry about the next generation, what should that person's focus be, do you think? I'm very interested in your suggestions. You can go to marketplace.org/secretary of the future if you want to suggest something. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.